Let's go overseas now. And New York's Times Square is a familiar image on New Year's Eve, attracting thousands of revelers each year. But this year, Times Square is closed to the public and only a handful of spectators will be allowed to watch the iconic time ball drop to the stroke of midnight. Since last year's New Year's Eve, more than 340,000 Americans have lost their lives to COVID-19, with a record number of deaths recorded yesterday. The escalating pandemic is showing no signs of easing. Rachel Mealy reports.
The streets around New York's Times Square are usually bustling with crowds on New Year's Eve. People arrive early for the best vantage points as the events on stage unfold. But this year, New York doesn't have the same buzz. For Cole Zeiser, it's the first time he's been in New York for New Year's Eve.
It's crazy. It makes me a little bit sad.
Yeah. What is that?
Just not... It's our first time in New York on, you know, New Year's Eve. And it's not going to be, you know, what we wanted. What everyone dreams about in New York, you know?
He says with all that's unfolded across the United States in 2020, he's hoping the country starts off on a better foot this year.
Better leadership that inspires unity and love between people, because I think that's been really lacking this year, and it makes the world kind of a hopeless place sometimes.
But those hopes may already be misdirected. The ambitious plans to vaccinate millions of Americans is off to a slower, messier start than public officials had hoped. Public health departments across the country are struggling to overcome logistical hurdles in order to put together a rollout plan. Anthony Fauci, the government's top infectious diseases expert, says the federal government should be giving local and state governments more resources.
Well, rather than stepping in and taking over, I think it would be maybe better to give more resources and to work with them in tandem with them. In other words, in not saying we're taking over, we're going to do your job, but saying we're going to really help you to do your job, particularly by giving you many more resources.
It's been a long year for health workers on the front line of the battle against the disease. Australian nurse Yanti Turung is one of them. She's come home to see her family and is currently in quarantine in Sydney. For the past 8 months, she's managed the Louisiana COVID facility in New Orleans.
Our facility initially when we opened was just, you know, cots and people that could probably manage their own medication, and it was an isolation unit. And then very quickly, within 5 days, we had to like change everything, nursing ratios, beds, the type of staff that we were having in order to be able to deal with this influx of not only COVID positive patients, but extremely complicated, immobile patients. So it was a wild time. We had no fatalities or nobody died in our unit, which we're very proud to say.
Across the entire 8 months, nobody has died in that unit.
Yeah, so during our entire 8 month stint, we had nobody died in the facility, and we also, which we're very proud of, had no contraction of COVID between staff. And we had probably between 800 and 1,000 staff over that time in and out of the unit, from like cleaning to nurses to physicians to all of the wraparound services, and we managed to keep everyone safe.
That's incredible, because that has been a real challenge for healthcare facilities everywhere else in the world, is keeping those frontline workers safe. What's been the secret?
I think one of the secrets was that Dr. John Carlson and I both worked the Ebola epidemic in Sierra Leone, and both worked in Ebola treatment units, and we basically set up our COVID facility like an Ebola treatment unit. You have to be meticulous about the steps. You got to understand how infectious disease travels and moves from surfaces to people, how long it survives, what can kill it. And understanding that and ensuring that your healthcare workers have the appropriate PPE, as well as the mindset and education.
You are home now to visit your mum and dad in Kyneton in Victoria.
Yes.
How have you been monitoring the news of Victoria and of the Melbourne outbreak, and more generally just how Australia has managed the pandemic?
One thing for Australia that really had it going for them was that it's such a small population, and a population that generally likes to get in line when they need to. They're reasonably compliant. So I was like, well, hopefully when, you know, people say stay home, everyone will stay home. I understood the border closures I think that there was an ability to do this type of mass closing down and isolation or people having to stay at home just based on your sheer smaller population numbers. If I could say to the Australian public, like, it's worth it. Like, where we are now in the United States is, you know, tumultuous, painful, grief-stricken. But to be here and maybe not even know someone that knew someone that knew someone that had COVID, I mean, what a utopic place to live. So I'm impressed with how Australia managed COVID, and, you know, they should continue what they're doing because it's going to save lives.
That report from Rachel Mealy.